this song has to do with synchronicity and knowing when it comes. When it hits, when it arrives, and what you've got to do, you've got to react, okay? don't come from ego, because ego is not
activated. It comes from the other dimension of ourselves, which Jung calls the self with a capital S. And this self is the dream maker. And this self is not your individual self with a small s. That's another word for personality or ego. But this higher self draws from the collective treasure chest of images. So the kind of dreams that you or I might have are the same kind that people are having in Iran or Java or anywhere in the world, all using the same images. The images are meant, in fact, for Jung says that our soul is images, made up of images. So these images that come to us bring some kind of message about the design that is unfolding. Some of the dreams, since our psyche is both personal and collective, some of the dreams tell us about our personal story, and some tell us about our collective, common human story. I'll talk about this as we go along. So that if we could, let me say one more thing. If we could imagine that our ego could become very one-sided. Let's use a simple example. Ego could be overly passive, let people take advantage of you, let people use you, be submissive. Or our ego could be overly aggressive, take advantage of others, make them submit to you, be controlling. Well, something in the psyche always wants to move toward homeostasis, which means an evenness, things working together in a cooperative way, so that wholeness can result. What is wholeness? The combination of apparent opposites. So here are two opposites, passivity and aggressiveness. If you're overly passive in your conscious life, then the dream maker, which is your higher self, may show you images of aggression, and if you're highly aggressive, your psyche may give you dreams of you becoming more passive. Because it wants to combine, wants to show the two sides of the coin. That's the nature of wholeness, which is what it's aiming at. Who is the it? Your own higher self. So higher self wants us not to be one-sided, but to have two-sided coins in us. So whatever is missing will appear in dream. They may be shocked to say, oh, in the dream I killed somebody. Does this mean that there's something wrong with me? No. It just means that there's not enough lively aggression, healthy aggression in you. Could take the form of anger, for instance, that's missing in your life. And so the dream is trying to show you what you need to work on. Everybody follow so far? Now, when I said that some of the dreams are personal, like about, say, your family or relatives. And in the dream, they look, or friends, and in the dream, they look picture perfect. Those are probably dreams about actual family members. Whereas when they look different, or when you see people that you never saw before, then they're more likely to be symbols of the collective, that is the archetypal, the universal themes that are in everyone's psyche. And we see these themes in stories and myths, but actually they're also inside us. And so every once in a while they come up. These dreams, the collective archetypal ones, will be very vivid and very memorable, unforgettable really. Whereas the more personal ones might be easily forgotten. See, dreams go into the short-term memory, so that's why you forget them easily. And I have my little list in here of how to remember your dreams. So I refer you to that. Starts on page 145. Recurrent dreams would be examples of another feature of the dream world. Let's say you have something inside yourself that's still unfinished. For instance, feelings that you never really expressed fully. Or conflicts that you never resolve. Or events that you never really understood. Since dreams work in a compensatory way and they always want to move toward wholeness so that you could see both sides of yourself, another area of wholeness is finishing up the unfinished business. So we have unfinished business from childhood having to do with feelings that we had toward our family members, parents especially, that we've never fully expressed. Conflicts with them that we never fully resolved. And events that occurred that we never fully understood, that were mysterious. Why did my parents do certain things? Why did certain things happen? And nobody ever told us because it was part of the family secret. So that will sit in you as unfinished. And everything that's sitting inside in its unfinished state is constantly looking for the chance to finish itself up. What is trying to finish itself up? Feelings, conflicts, and events, mysterious events. So one way this happens is through dreams, which give us some insight into what feelings are still not expressed fully enough. As an example of the person who is very passive, has a dream about being very aggressive. Which conflicts are waiting to be resolved? And which events are not fully known yet? Sometimes the unfinished feelings, conflicts, and events find a way of finishing themselves through synchronicity or through sudden realizations or through therapy or through just ordinary daily living. We think back about a certain event in our childhood and we say, oh, that's what it was about. Oh, that's what they were up to. Follow me? recurrent dreams, ones that keep happening over and over again, point you to something unfinished in yourself. There'll always be a feeling of conflict or a mystery of some kind. And the dreams help us locate what is unfinished. And the way to work with this would be to finish this, what is unfinished in your conscious life. So I'll explain how to do this in a chapter called Active Imagination. So you take something that occurred in the dream and you start a dialogue with it, or dialogue with one of the characters in the dream. And this Jung calls this dreaming the dream onward. Instead of just leaving it where it is, you kind of meditate on it and move it along and see what comes up when you just quietly sit and work with the images that have arrived in your dream. It's very exciting, and it shouldn't be taken literally. If you don't want to think that your dreams are telling you something that will definitely happen, although that could occur, of course. But this is the native language of the unconscious, what Freud called the royal road into the unconscious. Remember that our conscious life is only the tip of the iceberg. This is how much we know about ourselves. Just the tip of the iceberg. And then, so this is conscious. The unconscious, what we don't know about ourselves, what is unfinished, is like the entire iceberg under the frozen waters. It's going to be very hard to bring some of this up. The dreams occasionally bring up one of the contents, one of the unfinished contents, up to the surface. This is where the dream occurs, on the surface of the water. And then it's up to a conscious mind to take what came from the dream and bring it up into consciousness. And it has this compensatory style. It's trying to compensate for what is missing or too much. I mean, it couldn't be a better example of synchronicity, because it's the coincidence of what is missing or too much and what we dream. Jung has a very interesting statement, which I just want to mention. Did you have a question, Keith?
Yes. Just a comment.
Yes.
I still dream that I'm sighted, and it's been over 50 years. So it keeps going back, to that memory of what storage back there. Mm. And even though in a dream I will carry my cane, I can still see. Sneak, people get out of your way.
Yes, it is. Thank you for telling us that. And of course, you become sighted in so many other ways. I want to mention this very interesting statement by Jung. The Annunciation refers to the first scene in the New Testament, in which the Virgin Mary was alone in her room and the angel Gabriel appeared to her and said, "Hail, full of grace, the Lord is with you." She was shocked by this greeting, and they had a little conversation about her destiny, which was to be the mother of Christ and then the mother of all of us. To which she said yes, even though it meant great suffering. And that little scene is called the Annunciation. In other words, an announcement was made to her. So Jung says this, dream work releases an experience that grips or falls upon us as from above, an experience that has substance and body, such as those things which occurred to the ancients. If I were to symbolize it, I would choose the Annunciation. So if you want to know what the dream world is like, look at that scene. It's a visit from a messenger who tells you about your destiny, but in a confusing way. She wondered what manner of greeting this might be. She questioned, how can this happen since I'm still a virgin? He says, the power of the Most High will overshadow you, and the Holy Spirit will make this happen. So she's finding out that, oh, there's another world besides this one where things are done differently. He's inviting me into it, and I'm going to say yes. That's what's happening in dreams. It's the archetype of, I'm on page 153, second paragraph. It's the archetype of being open to receiving the tidings of destiny. Mary symbolizes the willing ego that finally says yes unconditionally. Result, becoming full or pregnant with God, the archetype of wholeness. And look at all the synchronicities in this moment. The meeting of the angelic and the human, the male and the female, the mortal and the immortal, the transpersonal and the personal, the finite and the infinite, virginity and maternity, ego and self, limitation and wholeness. And when we work on our dreams, we facilitate all those combinations. The Annunciation means more than receiving tidings. In this event, we are touched by the zeal of the divine to enter our human condition and the joy of human nature to participate in it. And I give a quote by Jung. For every step the ego takes toward the higher self takes 100 steps toward the ego. Mm-hmm. Referring to the zeal of the self for an embodiment in us. So that's what was really happening. The divine was saying, I want to be embodied. Will you help me embody myself? I can't do it unless you say yes. When she said yes, be it done unto me according to the way you express it. When she said that, she invited in this divine possibility. It couldn't be a more profound event in the spiritual world than that one. And it's what's being offered to every one of us. Because these stories are not about an event that happened long ago to someone. This is telling us the events that are happening now to everyone, as long as we would recognize the event and say yes to it. It was never meant to be about some one woman who said something. It was always meant to be a metaphor for what's happening all the time, or could happen if we were only ready to notice it. Okay, any questions about that part? Yes?
I have a question. Sometimes I have dreams about people who have passed away that I'm close to.
Yes.
And they are extremely vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like busy. I mean, and it's just extremely vivid, much more vivid than any other dreams I have.
Yes, I think we can all I think we've all, have other people have that same, like you dream of a mother or grandmother and they're holding you in a tender way, or they're conversing with you, or they're somehow with you in a way that's a little different from usual. It's as if they're completing something with you. So that's what's happening. Because everything wants to complete itself. What does complete itself mean? The full version of the love that you had in your relationship with them. The full version of the togetherness. That's what wants to come through. So dreams take us there, and they show us what it looks like. That, oh, this is really happening in the other world, in the unconscious world, the part of the iceberg that has been hidden all these years in the cold and freezing waters. There's something that wants to come to the surface, wants to thaw itself into our life story. And aren't we lucky to be in a world like this one, where this kind of thing happens? Okay, so let's take a look finally at our... any other questions on that? Okay. Let's take a look at our chapter 8, which is on synchronicity and spirituality, although that, of course, has been our topic all along. And I'll start with this quotation from Carl Jung on page 157. The more we become conscious of ourselves through self-knowledge, so all that we've just been talking about, and act accordingly, the more the layer of the personal unconscious will be diminished. So more and more thawing out of what was unconscious. And in this way, there arises a consciousness no longer imprisoned by petty personal interests. This widened consciousness is a function of our relationship to the world, bringing us into an absolute binding and indissolubly communion with the universe. There is no individuation on Everest. So you can't do all of what we've been describing just alone by yourself sitting on the top of Mount Everest. This is a work that we do together. Hence the importance in our own spiritual journey of continual connections . So the idea of a church was really about this. Church is a way of acknowledging that you don't do your spiritual work alone. You do it in a community of others who join you in this work. It was not meant to be about hierarchy and obedience. It was meant to be about a hierarchy of service that helps everyone in the group move toward their goal. What is this goal? To reveal in our lifetime the wholeness that is bigger than any lifetime. And synchronicity certainly helps us get there because it shows connections that we weren't aware of before. So, on page 177, I have some very specific ways of working with the dedication of ourselves to this wholeness. I am thankful for the work I have accomplished and the graces I have received as I've been in this class and working with this book, for instance. I acknowledge and appreciate the synchronicities in my daily life. I acknowledge that there's a meaning in what looks so chaotic, that there's a design in what looks like a random display. I am seeking community with others on my path. I am reclaiming my body as a channel of spirituality. I celebrate my powers and passions and say no to every voice that tells me my body is bad or sinful. I drop the need for certainty. I've become comfortable with ambiguity. I let go of fear and obligation and live by love and choice. I look back over my life and all that has happened. I recall the people I've known and all they did to, with, and for me, and all that I did to, with, and for them. I begin with my parents and end with the most recent person I have met. I see how it has been like a story. An order and continuity pervades it. I trust that it has a meaning, and love makes this meaning visible. I trust its power. I notice the messages that limited or expanded me. The ones that limited said, don't go that far. The ones that expanded me said, go for it. If I believe that the way everything turns out after all I have done, if I believe that the way everything turns out after I have done all I can to fix or change things reveals my path, then what is my path right now? I can picture this scene. I see all the characters in my life as if they were all on a stage and they're all taking a bow. And then when the characters in the play take a bow, the heroes and the villains all bow equally. You notice that? In other words, all the heroes and villains were equally important in the wonderful story of my life. They all deserve applause from me. They were all necessary to the plot and the denouement, and they were all entertaining. So I'm going to greet each one with compassion and thanks, realizing that this is what it took for me to become who I am. My only search is for that which is always and already all of ours. So it isn't just about me, it's about what all of us are about. Everybody follow? Okay. Any final questions before we wind up? Because I want to end with a poem, but I want to be sure that everybody gets a chance to ask something if you had any final questions on anything that we've talked about. So our topic has been the power of coincidence and how it shows us what we need to know. So now when coincidences occur, we will ask ourselves, is this showing me something that's important to where I go next on my journey? And how lucky I am that something is at work in the universe that's helping me find my home. And it's happening night or day. when Dante was in purgatory, he noticed that the souls were working off their payment for their sins during the day, but he also noticed that during the night they were working off some of their karma through their dreams. Isn't that interesting? So he says, oh, it's a 24-hour style. Except the ones who were yanked out because of indulgences. Anyway, purgatory would be yet another metaphor. Metaphor for what? That sometimes, even at death, everything is not complete. And it has kind of an optimism, and it says, well, you might get a chance to work through some things even after you die. And maybe the relatives who visit us in dreams are doing that. They're working off some of those, some of the unfinished business that they have with us. They didn't tell us they loved us enough, so they come back and tell us now in a dream. Okay, well, I'd like to end with this beautiful part of a longer poem called The Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, written in the late 1700s. It's the story, poem, narrative poem, and I learned this part in high school and still remember it, so I'd like to share it. And in this story, this sailor called Mariner kills the bird of good omen, which is the albatross, a bird that follows the ship and picks up the scraps of garbage. But without knowing why, that's important. Without knowing why means it comes from the unconscious. So already we're in the spiritual world. He kills this bird, and the other sailors know that this means bad luck. So they tie the albatross around his neck, so he has to carry around this dead bird as punishment for having killed him. Of course, the bad luck does occur because the sailors die one by one, and there is no water left, no drinkable water left, and the ship is described as idle, as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. And also the mariner is, of course, in great despair and very lonely, can't sleep, doesn't have anything to drink, and it seems like he has reached the low point at which there is no hope. And I'm going to pick up the story at this point and show how the hope came to him through the archetype of grace, which he describes as a kind saint. When you hear kind saint, that's the grace. And the synchronicity is in the scene that I'll be describing, because he has a little moment in which his heart opens, thanks to grace, and he appreciates the beauty in nature, which before he had killed. Alone, alone, all alone, alone on a wide, wide sea, and never a saint of pity on my soul in agony. A thousand, thousand slimy things lived on, and so did I. The moving moon went up the sky, and nowhere did abide. Softly she was going up, with a star or two beside. Her beams bemocked the sultry main, like April hoarfrost spread. And where the ship's huge shadow lay, the charmed water burnt all away, a still and awful red. Beyond the shadow of the ship, I watched the water snakes. They moved in tracks of shining white, and when they reared, an elfish light fell off in hoary flakes. Beyond the shadow of the ship, I watched their rich attire, blue, glossy green, velvet black. They coiled and swam, and every track was a flame of golden fire. Oh, happy living things, no tongue their beauty might declare. A spring of love gushed from my heart, and I blessed them unaware. Sure, my kind saint took pity on me, and I blessed them unaware. The selfsame moment I could pray, and from my neck so free, the albatross fell off and sank like lead into the sea. Ah, sleep, it is a gentle thing, beloved from pole to pole, to Mary, Queen, the praise be given. She sent the gentle sleep from heaven that slid into my soul. Thank you all.